Good morning. Welcome to Wednesday morning. Evan Bray, good to have you here. Thanks so much for giving us some time today. We chatted with Michael Wieger off the top of the show. Michael Wieger, of course, the Minister of Community Safety, and talked about a few things, but where I started was the topic of Jason Paul Thorne, 49-year-old, high-risk sex offender that is once again being moved into a neighborhood, the Heritage neighborhood in Regina. And I say once again because this has happened before. I've had a number of people say, how many times are we going to hear about this guy being released into the neighborhood? Something happens, obviously. He breaches a condition. He goes back into custody, and then he's back out again. I mean, the guy has shown repeatedly he cannot follow the rules. He's a number of conditions placed on him, can't follow the rules, and is high risk to reoffend. This is what we're hearing from the authorities. And this is where, I mean, I'm sorry, but this is where police get very frustrated, because he has been arrested. He has committed a crime. He's committed multiple crimes, heinous crimes, and has been arrested, charged, and gone to court. Here's the problem. In Canada, a prison sentence has an end date. Almost all the time, with one exception that I'll talk about in a second. But a prison date has an end date. And so you get convicted of your crime, you go to jail. At some point, though, you get out of jail. And in this case, they're saying he's a high risk to reoffend. Now, did they put conditions on him? Yes, they did. Like, I'm not going to read them all, but I'm just going to say, follow a treatment plan, follow psychological counseling plan, psychiatric counseling, a medicine regime, abstain from consuming or possessing alcohol and drugs, don't associate with any person who's involved in crime, report all intimate sexual and non-sexual relationships, don't purchase or possess pornography, don't be in the presence of children under 18, don't be near any places where children under 18 congregate, and reside at a designated community-based facility. You tell me that he's not going to breach those. Like, he's going to breach those conditions. He needs to be designated as a dangerous offender, because in Canada, a dangerous offender designation gives you an indeterminate sentence, basically. You could be in jail for the rest of your life. If it is deemed that you are a danger to the community, like this guy is, then that affects your release. And you could be in jail for the rest of your life. And I can hear some people saying, well, keeping them in jail keeps, you know, it has a cost to it as well. Yeah, it does. But I don't want a 6-year-old, a 12-year-old, an 18-year-old. I don't want anyone being victimized by this monster. It is time that we expand the dangerous offender parameters. It is time we have longer jail sentences for serious offenders. And yes, there are other things that we can do in the community: electronic monitoring, better supervision, better rehabilitation and treatment programs. However, some people prove that they can't be rehabilitated. And for those people, we need to have a solution better than what we have right now. Do you agree? 1-877-332-8255. Phone lines are open. Text lines are open. So far on the text line, I mean, I've got a lot of people agreeing. Cameron in Regina, my opinion, if you've got a repeat sexual predator who's at high risk to reoffend, they should never be allowed in public again. Give me a logical argument to the contrary and I'm happy to listen. I agree. I don't know if that there is one. I've never met a person in my life who thinks these sorts of creeps should be set free again. That's Cameron. Sharon in Regina. So Sharon, I'm going to, because Sharon's text says to hear the public safety minister, it was the community safety minister that we had on this morning, say this guy did his time. He did. And Minister Michael Wieger can't change the criminal code. Provincially, they can't do it. As you heard him say, there are likely conversations going on right now amongst prosecutors in the province to say, look, is it time to designate this guy a dangerous offender? And that's a process, and it's not an easy process. And while, you know, the courts will say we make it challenging for a reason, we don't want just designations of dangerous offenders willy-nilly, many people would argue, well, I think we need to loosen that a little bit. Because if we can't call this guy a dangerous offender, who can we call a dangerous offender? The statement from the police slash justice system that there is a high likelihood that he will reoffend and that he was released, then he was re-released, is absurd. This will continue to happen as long as we have liberal laws and liberal judges applying those laws. That's from Sean in Weyburn. Les is asking, why do they always release a sex offender into the Heritage neighborhood? Well, part of the reason is because they release them into a supervised residence. There are certain residences in the city that provide that type of supervision and monitoring of his activities, and there is one in the Heritage neighborhood. Now, you can imagine the people in that neighborhood aren't jumping up and down about it, but they exist in other neighborhoods, not just in Regina, but in Saskatoon, in Prince Albert, in Moose Jaw. I mean, this is part of community reintegration, and that's a whole conversation that we tend to have. 1-877-332-8255. Do you have thoughts on this? I'm sure you do. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Shane in Saskatoon. A lot of people are frustrated feeling as if Minister Uyghur was throwing up his hands saying there's not much you can do. This is part of the problem. This is actually why I had the minister on the show, because there is very little that he can do. I asked him the question about, do you take the opportunity to lobby the federal government to say, look, we want to enhance community safety. I mean, you find me a politician that hasn't at one point in their life said, we want to enhance community safety. And I think the province, Saskatchewan, has taken a lot of steps through the years, whatever is within their control to enhance community safety. But so much has to do with the Criminal Code of Canada, which we know provincially they can't change. That's federal legislation. And you heard Minister Uyghur talk about the work that they've done, the conversations they've had with their federal counterparts. So here's one. I appreciate this text because it's from Dylan, who often, Dylan in Saskatoon, will call himself Radicalized Dylan. Most of his texts that come in, he'll sign it, Radicalized Dylan. The real question about this is, who wants this? And he says, and I'm a radicalized leftist, and I don't want these people to get out. You're a conservative on the right end, and you don't want these people to get out, am I? Is that where you're labeling me? Why are they getting out? Is this the same issue we have with hospitals? We've just run out of beds, so we push them out the door? Dylan, thanks for the text. This person is a high risk to reoffend who has shown that he will commit the crime again. This isn't about rehabilitation. You already had your shot. If this guy has been done so much, rehabilitation is not going to work. Make it mandatory for these offenders to live next door to the decision makers for at least 6 months, says Linda in Saskatoon. 1-877-332-8255. What should happen? What are your thoughts? Tom in Choiceland is quick on the phone this morning. Tom, your thoughts? We're talking about dangerous offenders being released into the community.
Yes, that's where I can agree with Mr. Donald Trump. You know why? Because there, when you get sentenced to life, you're going to die in jail. Mm-hmm. Don't get out. That's why. Well, that's where our law is wrong. You know what the maximum life sentence is in Canada?
25 years, yeah.
That's what it is. Well, why don't you listen to Mr. Trump, and you're going to die in jail. That's where you're going to end up, is dead in jail.
Well, the point is well taken. Is there are some offenders, and I realize that generally speaking, the system is set up to try and rehabilitate offenders to the point that they can get out and become contributing members to society. It happens once in a while. I don't know if we can say regularly, but it happens once in a while. And then there's this big gray area in between. But then there is the extreme. And I would suggest that Jason Paul Thorne is on that extreme end. He's 49 years old. He has been integrated back into the community more than once, each time failing to abide by conditions. He is deemed to be continued a very high risk to reoffend. Treatment interventions, the officials that have been working with him say treatment interventions have had poor success, and he is a high risk to reoffend. I mean, this is why there are screams for reform. This is why we have screams by people to say we need to reform the justice system generally. I said we need to expand the dangerous offender provisions. We need longer sentences for chronic repeat violent offenders. Bail laws need to be reformed. This is, I think, where Larry is going in Saskatoon. Larry, you're thinking reforming, criminal reform has to be sweeping.
Well, it does, and our provincial politicians don't have enough backbone. And I think the people have to provide them with that backbone. Now, if we had the referendum legislation that Alberta has, we could get support for that. There'd be a free and open discussion. The sanctions of society, we've talked about that before, we don't have those anymore. The law's been watered down, and the right of self-defense, you've mentioned that, of course. So if we had that, then we would have Ottawa looking at, well, is this going to be an issue for independence? Because with independence, we could drop the crime rate in half within a year. So Ottawa...
Do you think we could, Larry?
Definitely, yeah.
Because we'd have control over the criminal code, essentially?
The criminal code, and they'd be our judges, reasonable judges from the community who believe in public safety, and we could put that as the highest. It was in the past. It was the highest priority on sentencing, is public safety, and the judges we have down in Ottawa, they're letting criminals low sentences so they don't get deported. Low sentences because of the color of their skin. Or something that may or not have happened to their grandparents. It's totally absurd. And we need to have the people have self-government here.
Interesting. Interesting. Larry is drawing the line to, you know, a referendum on separation, which at first I'm like, where are you going with this, Larry? But I understand what he's saying. Because right now, and I've said this before, as a province, there's things we can do to try and enhance safety. And I believe our province has taken many steps through the years, not just in the most recent history, but through the years, our province has taken steps to try and enhance community safety through the levers that it has. However, it doesn't have the big one. It doesn't have the criminal code. It doesn't have all of the federal criminal justice system structure that has to be adjusted federally. And that's a big part of the problem of what we're talking about on this instance currently in Regina in the Heritage neighborhood. Let's take a break. We'll be right back here. 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
So the USMCA, are you looking to update that?
I don't care. I mean, I don't really want to. Here's the thing. Mexico and Canada need us. We don't need them. The deal is important for them. It's not important for us.
Are we sure about that? I don't know if we're sure about that or not. I think you need our oil. I think you need our potash. 1-877-332-8255. We're talking about the high-risk offender in the city of Regina. This just happens to be Regina right now, but this has happened throughout the province. Jason Paul Thorne, high-risk sex offender, offended against young girls and has done time for that, has been released into the community, but is deemed to be a high risk to reoffend. And we're asking, how is this possible? We had the Minister of Community Safety on, but again, I mean, this is the situation where he was given a prison sentence and it has reached the end date. And so despite the fact that he is still a high risk to reoffend, our current justice system doesn't have a mechanism to keep him in jail unless he's designated as a high-risk offender, which I would suggest, let's get going. Do you need me to print off the paperwork for you? Because we should be doing it. Cindy in Saskatoon, maybe a judicial solution would be to review the actions of those who take a position to uphold justice and those who are found guilty of implementing laws and policies that violate true justice can be handed some jail time on their own. Society would definitely benefit from rehabilitating any and all troublemakers that sit atop at the top level of our Canadian judicial process. Cindy, thanks for your take. So Tyler in Saskatoon is saying, look, when the Liberals got in, the cost of incarcerating criminals was through the roof. The Liberals brought in jail and bail to ease up on the cost associated with prisons and jails because they needed tax money to be used elsewhere. Has anyone looked into the costs associated with this? The pendulum has swung too far, in my opinion, Tyler. That's the problem. Yes, there is a cost to keeping people in jail, but the cost of not keeping them in jail is much more extreme and has much more serious consequences. 1-877-332-8255. Quinn in Saskatoon. This is absolutely insane, says Quinn. I'm a firm believer in serious consequences for anyone who sexually abuses anyone, let alone children. If it was up to me, they would never get out. They would go from jail to serving straight time in the psych ward for monitoring if they were getting out of jail. Quinn then goes on to bring up capital punishment. If you sexually abuse a child, you don't deserve to live, let alone walk amongst the public. Capital punishment. That's a whole other discussion. 1-877-332-8255. John in Ituna, I think it's time the whole judicial system was run by the provinces. Federal laws only exist with things like terrorism, drugs, smuggling, etc. I would guarantee Saskatchewan and Alberta would be the safest provinces. Shane in Saskatoon, can we get a referendum on the Criminal Code of Canada? The sad part is that government officials think that serial predators can be rehabilitated, and that's why they let these animals out in public. That's from Albert on the road today. Let them go and reoffend or spend tax dollars keeping them locked up. Frank in Swift Current reminds us there is a third option that's available in the United States. So he's talking about capital punishment. 1-877-332-8255. Lots of great thoughts and discussion on this. This is one of those topics that sadly, and I mean sadly, we will talk about again. What about the provincial funding for event centers in the province? Three of them were learned on Monday that the province plans to spend some money, Saskatoon, Prince Albert, and North Battleford, as long as the federal government chips in some money as well. Do you like this idea? Some do, some don't. I'd love to hear from you. That's where we're going next on Open Lines here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Number of people who want Alberta to remain a part of Canada far outnumbers the people who want to leave. The largest support for staying in Canada is in Alberta's two big cities. Calgary, 78% of respondents say they'll definitely or probably vote to stay. In Edmonton, 80%. 66% of respondents in central and northern Alberta say they'll vote to remain. And 72% of those in the south feel the same way.
It's amazing, that new poll, really the numbers haven't changed. I mean, it's still roughly around 25-30% of Albertans that feel separating from Canada is the right way to go. So they do these polls, and they have over the last 6 months, and yet the numbers remarkably stay fairly similar. Okay, a couple of things before we get back to Open Lines. First of all, big guest alert. This is a big guest alert for the Green Zone today. How about this? Connor Bedard at 2:30. On the Green Zone with Jamie Nye this afternoon. That's exciting. One I will be definitely tuning in for. Great to have Connor Bedard on the show, of course. I mean, he was a local legend back in the day when he was playing, of course, his WHL hockey with the Pats, and somewhat a regular. He's risen to stardom now, and it's a little more complicated to get him on the show. So happy to hear that Connor Bedard will be on the Green Zone this afternoon at 2:30. The other thing I wanted to talk about is often we have lots of texts that'll come in. We get some phone calls, but sometimes people say, look, I'd love to call in, but I'm busy and I can't wait on the phone for a long period of time. Well, there is a solution. And Nicole Garn, who is joining me in studio today, is helping us with that.
Yes, I'm here.
We need Nicole's mic. Sorry. Gotcha.
Hello.
Yes. So voice memos. This is a way that people, if you don't want to wait on the phone, you can send in a voice memo through text message.
Exactly. Or sometimes our phone lines are absolutely jammed up, and if you can't get through to Frank, this is the next best thing. You just send us a voice memo.
Right. So this is not voice to text.
No.
This is a voice memo. So it comes through like an audio recording.
Exactly. Basically. Exactly.
So is it easy to do on the phone?
It is so easy. So I have our 1-877-332-8255 number. Mm-hmm. Saved on my phone as a contact, and instead of texting us, there's a couple of ways you can do it, but there should be a kind of squiggly, almost wavelength looking button on your phone. You hold that down and it kind of shows up red, and you can see the wavelengths showing up there. You stop it when you're done telling your story and saying who you are, where you're from. You hit send, and that comes our way.
Right. And there's also, I think, on iPhones, and I'm sure on Androids too, there's a plus button.
Yes, there's a plus button, and you can hit the audio button, and it does the exact same thing. It prompts up the little wavelengths. You can see your voice memo coming through. You hit stop, and then send it to us.
Voice memos.
Exactly.
Let's get used to it. I love it. We'll use those. Nicole, thank you so much for popping in. Okay, let's go back to open lines. 1-877-332-8255. I'm going to take one more caller on the justice system because I want to get into Deed in a second, but Greg in Saskatoon's waiting patiently. Greg, your thoughts.
Well, you know, these sex offenders, like you say, it keeps, you know, happening time and time again, and it's ridiculous. So for anybody that ever gets convicted of something like that, whether it's, you know, from this point on, if you've done it in the past or you do it in the future, once you get released, I say we create, we've got, Saskatchewan's a big area. We could cordon off a big area and create like a escape from New York scenario where here's the deal. If you do it again, you're not going back to jail. You're getting tossed in there and you can send yourself.
You could spend the rest of your life there.
Yeah, and make sure they understand that they know, like, this, the Constitution and everybody has the right to, you know, no. You took that away when you did that. Mm-hmm. And you're getting tossed in this area, and now you have to fend for yourself.
Do the crime, you do the time. Consequences need to be known and serious. Greg, thank you so much for the text. Okay, we heard earlier this week Saskatchewan's premier made it known that they are asking the federal government to help finance event center projects in Saskatoon, Prince Albert, and North Battleford. So this is the downtown event and entertainment district in Saskatoon, the Prince Albert Convention and Cultural Center, and the Battleford's Arena. So they are looking for Ottawa to use Ottawa's Build Community Strong Fund and fund up to a maximum of a third of the eligible project cost. So this would roughly be about $400,000 for the feds and $400,000 for the province. Not unprecedented that the province would contribute to this. I'm not overly offended by the province saying that they are going to spend money on this. Keep in mind, the province, when the Mosaic Stadium was built in Regina, the province contributed money. The federal government did not. But the theory was that although this is going to be situated in the city of Regina, I'm talking about Mosaic Stadium, there would be provincial benefit, and there are people from all over the province that will use the facility, of course, for rider games and concerts and other things like that. The same could be said for Deed in Saskatoon, the Convention and Cultural Center in PA, the Battleford's Arena. I mean, these are all things that won't just be used by people in the city. So there's an argument that it shouldn't be based solely on the back of those taxpayers. Now, you know, the argument is if you get the federal government to chip in, then people in Quebec are helping to pay for the deed. If you get the province of Saskatchewan to chip in, people in Regina are helping the people in Saskatoon by paying for the deed. But there's a lot of people that don't like this. We've got a couple of guests on the show tomorrow on this topic, but I wanted to broach it today so that when I bring those guests on, I will be able to have some background on how you're feeling about this. And I'm going to start with James in Saskatoon. James, thanks for calling in. Are you offended that the province is looking to spend money on the deed in Saskatoon?
Actually, I think it's a brilliant idea. I really do. I think it reminds me of, do you remember Centennial Program in 1967.
I can't say I do.
Okay, well, in Saskatchewan, many a sports field was constructed because of that initiative, that we were celebrating a milestone in Canada, and it allowed us to understand that rec centers had a special place. And in Saskatoon, this is the scenario that we have here as well. We have a situation where there's the potential for us to have in excess of $1 billion worth of economic opportunity, and it would be silly of us to let this go by. It is very simple, if not easy, to say no. It takes more leadership to say yes. And the reason I say yes is because, you know, there's a lot of my fellow conservatives that are fiscal hawks and prudent and the like, but it's one thing for us to kind of be managing of the purse, if you will. But you also got to take advantage and build the future for our the new face of our community. And the new face of our community, when I started to investigate it and did some polling, there's a good cohort of people that are 18 to 35 that are strongly in favor of this project.
Do you think there's room, James, for private investment here? That's what a lot of people are saying, is why are we funding it solely by governments, different level of governments? We need private investment.
So, and I agree with you. And I think that that's why this partnership works. For me, Evan, the key is I don't want the city involved, because the argument is that the taxpayer of Saskatoon has the potential to have an overhang that it will, at some point in time when we look at the library, will have to be responsible for any debts. But if I bring a third-party entity that brings forward meaningful contributions, they bring skin into the game. Let them be the controller. I need them to be the controller. We have a provincial government. We have a federal government that sees the need. You know, it's undeniable to say in PA that the Art Hauser Center needs a jolt as well for their community. I think there isn't a person in this whole province that doesn't see the value in that. And the same thing is true here in Saskatoon. You know, it's kind of the old adage of, you know, sometimes when you're the eldest son, you got to host Christmas. Well, that's what happens in Saskatoon. We're the largest economic center in this province, and there's a necessity for us to host billions or events that are of provincial designation. Now, I will say the one thing that people need to get past is it's not what is entertainment now, but what will it be in 15, 20 years from now? You know, my heart of heart, I'm a big dreamer. You know that, Evan, right? And one of the things I want to have is an international competition of overland gaming, where we can have servers here in Saskatoon, and we would hold it at the end of January, beginning of February. It's minus 35 outside, and we'd have these servers be able to be cooled by the beautiful air outside, and we would have international computer gaming competition here in our city.
James, you might have lost some people there. I don't know, but, you know, once we start stepping into the technology stuff and close to, I know you're not talking about an AI data center, but I just know I've been bit by that bug in this province before already. I want to keep going. There's lots of people on the phone lines, because there are a lot of people that do not like this at all. Completely opposed to the federal government getting involved, the provincial government getting involved in this. I'm going to take a couple of these calls. Justin, hang on a second. I'll be right with you. But Wayne, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, hi, Evan. It's so good you're on this topic, because I was just listening to the last fellow, and I think I couldn't hold a more different position. I'm so angry that I hardly know where to begin. I mean, in Saskatoon here, I don't know about Prince Albert, I don't know about North Battleford, but here we had the Ramey Gallery stuffed down our throat. The library is going to be obscenely expensive. They're building this link transit thing with concrete bus stops all over the city. No one knows what the hell they're for. They haven't, they're not able to find, find an avenue downtown where to go. First Avenue is not going to work. And now on Monday, I just about fell out of my chair listening to the radio, and we hear that the Saskatchewan government is going to kick in a third of what they're estimating to be, I think it's $1.3 billion. That will double, mark my word, and we just can't afford it. And if I get nothing else in today, Evan, my big point in calling is that, and there was talk of this in the previous segment, we need a referendum on this, please, so that if it's going to be built, this convention center downtown, we don't really need it. We don't need a new rink, for that matter. Please let there be a referendum. If it leads to a majority, fine, at least that. But without a referendum, I'm 85 years old. I'm too old to start it. Otherwise, I wish I could. Mm-hmm. I think I might. But I'm hoping that maybe, I don't know, the Chamber of Commerce would be good. Some local group, and I think it would catch fire and at least give people a chance to say yes, no.
I'll tell you this, Wayne. I've got the mayor of Saskatoon on tomorrow, Cynthia Block. I've also got a gentleman who's against lots of things about this project. So we've got two sides on tomorrow, but I will make sure that we bring up referendum with Mayor Cynthia Block tomorrow. One more caller before the break. I want to take Justin in Saskatoon. Thanks for calling in, Justin. Your thoughts on the deed and this announcement by the province on their contribution?
It's almost like if we talk about it enough and we get the right people in front of the camera and Cynthia Block can find an empty mall that she can tell everybody how great and economically beneficial this is, that somehow it gets done. This partnership with the provincial government that is just drunk on spending is only going to, like, I keep coming back to this, is only going to cost money. And no matter what third, so you pay taxes municipally, you're going to pay taxes provincially, and you're paying taxes federally. So either we all just accept that what we pay in taxes just doesn't matter anymore because we want shiny new things, or we actually start to think about the commitments that this is going to have. There isn't one capital project that the city of Saskatoon has been on budget on or on time. I can't stress that enough. Library is over budget already and will continue to be so. The new aquatic center that isn't even built, over budget. Every single thing they do is just astronomically high. So when you have all of these individuals touting how great this is going to be and how much we need it, where is the infrastructure? Your link? No, you don't have that. Do you have a C-train? No, you don't have that. You have no metro? No, you don't have that. So you have all of these problems that everybody, well, if we have a new downtown arena, we will have somewhere to go that'll be better. Well, nobody's going to go down there because you can't get down there. Mm-hmm. You have other factors playing a role in here, from homelessness to health care to affordability. All of these things are much higher on the priority scale than this new arena. Yet you have the provincial government touting now that they're going to spend all of this money, spend it on health care. If you have this money to spend and you're willing to do so, spend it on healthcare. Spend it on making our province more affordable.
Right. There's lots of people on the text line that are agreeing, Justin, with your point. I'm gonna take a break here right now, but keep in mind, tomorrow morning, I've got two guests. Right off the start, I've got Ken Wood joining us. Ken, former executive director of CUC. He has some strong thoughts on how this should and shouldn't be funded. Then we also have Mayor Cynthia Block on the program tomorrow a little later in the morning. So there will be lots of time tomorrow on Open Lines to discuss this as well. I want to get to some text, but it's great conversation. It's important conversation, and I'm glad that we're able to have it here this morning on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
It's an honor to have been the first to cross.
Inside, Gordie Howe, the grandson of Mr. Hockey, making the ceremonial first crossing around 10 to 10 Monday morning.
It feels like, personally, a memory that we will treasure, something that we'll be able to share with people, and feels like an honor to be a part of this.
7,500 vehicles in 12 hours. That was the day that they opened the bridge. That's how many vehicles the first 12 hours, 7,500. This is going to be a big corridor between Canada and the United States, the opening of the Gordie Howe Bridge this week. Lots of texts coming in on the deed and the province putting money into the deed. Cameron in Regina says, have we lost our minds? It's like having the band play on as the ship sinks. We can't even pay for the most basic of infrastructures. What are we doing? Trevor in Saskatoon, the province is broke. Irresponsible actions by the province to promise this money. I am offended, says Trevor. Gary in Regina said, I get putting money into these arenas, but my tax dollars for what? The two times that I may visit a special event in them? Is it different than our Western tax dollars for a high-speed rail in Ontario that we all scream, not my money? I want to invest my tax dollars, fix infrastructure in the province, and give me a tax break. Thank you to everyone joining the conversation. We are going to have a much more robust conversation on this tomorrow morning. I mentioned I've got a couple of guests joining the show, including Mayor Cynthia Block tomorrow morning. Regina's Mayor, Chad Baczynski, is joining us next here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.